Peggy Clark, and welcome to The Bridge. The Bridge pairs wise women and a few good men from different generations and geographies in revelatory conversation about what matters most. The Bridge is a podcast of the Aspen Institute, a forum for values-based leadership and the exchange of ideas. This month's episode of The Bridge was recorded in June at the Aspen Ideas Festival in Aspen, Colorado. And I am so excited to be joined by two of our nation's most dedicated activists for women, Cecile Richards and Alicia Garza. Alicia Garza is a writer, speaker, and freedom dreamer, that's her own phrase, and co-founder of Black Lives Matter. She's also special projects director for the National Domestic Workers Alliance, among also Black Futures Lab, right? Mm-hmm. So welcome.
Thank you.
Alicia,
thank
so
you.
Happy to have you with us. Cecile Richards, as everyone knows, is the former president of Planned Parenthood and former deputy chief of staff for House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi. She began her career organizing low-wage workers and hotel, healthcare, and janitorial industries throughout California, Louisiana, and Texas. And she's the daughter of Ann Richards, governor of Texas, who was a shining star at the Aspen Institute and graced the Board of Trustees meetings for many years. So together, along with iJam Poo, our dear friends, Cecile and Alicia have just founded Supermajority, a new home for women's activism, training, and mobilizing a multiracial, intergenerational community of women. They are determined to help build a long-term grassroots system to ensure that women will have true legislative and political power in the U.S. Welcome, Cecile and Alicia. We're so delighted to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Good. So let's just start from the beginning about what Supermajority is. And I want to clear up something from the start. Supermajority is more than just a short-term organizing effort in preparation for 2020 election. Your vision is about establishing a system for activating women for the longer term. Cecile, can you kick us off by telling us a little bit more about what is the roadmap Supermajority is building?
Sure. Well, and it's exciting to be here and really exciting to be here with Alicia, who I feel like, you know, I learn from every day. And that to me, she sort of embodies the spirit of this whole effort, which is how can women learn from each other, support each other, hold each other accountable, and build the kind of country that we want to live in. I also like to just define supermajority for a moment, because people sometimes say, why are you supermajority? Well, supermajority just means more than a simple majority. And absolutely, women in this country are way more than a simple majority. And I think it embodies the spirit of the feeling right now, which is that women are on fire. I mean, the women all around, and Alicia and I, along with iGen and other women we know, have been traveling the country listening to women. And everywhere we go, women are raising their hands and say, I want to do more. But what they're looking for is, frankly, support. They want to build community with other women across race, across geography, across generations, as you say. And they want to find out how to be more effective in sort of the civic space, everything from advocating for issues they believe in, learning the kind of skills they need to be true, super organizers. And also, obviously, you know, around election time, making sure that they and the women they know are informed, motivated, and participating in the electoral space. And I'll just say that I think that, you know, because we are a beginning effort, although we've been overwhelmed by the kind of interest and outreach that we've already seen, we are trying over this next 12 months to aggregate 2 million women around the country who are trained, motivated, connected, and who can really, certainly when it comes around to election time, lead the biggest woman-to-woman voter outreach program that we've ever seen. And no better time to do that than on the centennial of the 19th Amendment.
Wow, beautiful. Alicia?
I think that supermajority is really a place for women to find each other. Mm-hmm. I think that right now we're in a moment in this country where certainly, you know, Cecile says so wonderfully, it's not like conditions were great for women before this current administration, but certainly they have heightened the crisis in our communities. And what we find over and over again when we are talking to women around the country is that women are mad as hell and looking for other people who are mad as hell and ready to take action. And what we know is that women are already on fire. I mean, we talk all the time about how we're not we're not creating a movement. This movement is long and it is entrenched. But what we are doing is adding oxygen to the fire that women are spreading across the country, creating a place where women can find each other and say, you know what, I see you and I'm ready to build power with you and take power with you. And I think we're also really trying to make sure that we learn the lessons of this long movement for these times. And those lessons include, how do we build an intergenerational, a multiracial movement where people can really have each other's backs and build power together and build the kind of democracy that we know we all deserve?
Right. So beautifully said. So was it around a kitchen table? How did I love the idea, because I know you're a really good cook, Cecile. Were you and Ijan and Alicia, how did you decide to birth this together, the three of you?
Well, I mean, I'll take a first. Mm-hmm. It's funny. We've actually never really talked. We talk a lot about our kind of our origin story and how this all came to be. But the truth of it is, all of us were organizing women in different spaces. And I remember as I was deciding to leave Planned Parenthood after 12 years and trying to figure out, I know there's more that we need to do with women because they are everywhere just raising their hand. I saw Ijen and I said, you know, what if we actually were to pull all this together, all of us women organizers who are doing this work, and we weren't working in silos, but we were kind of building, frankly, a home, mm-hmm. kind of a home for activism. And then I, you know, we began, we talked, I got to know Alicia a little bit better, some of our other friends, Catherine Granger, the amazing leader at Civitas, Jess Morales-Ricchetto, some of my colleagues at Planned Parenthood. And the idea just kind of, it came out. And I think partly it was this feeling that, as Alicia says, it's a moment. It is a moment where everywhere you turn, women are doing more than they ever imagined. But how do we make sure that this moment isn't just something we look back on 20 years later and say, wasn't that cool, that time when women were really together? And instead we say, how do we take some of the best organizing talent in the country and aggregate it and provide the support that women need? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but look, we're on a journey here. This is, we know a lot, but we're learning a lot every day, particularly as we hear from women across the country.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Mm-hmm. So it's so a little bit of spontaneous combustion, and it sounds very organic. And that brings me to my next question, which is, I know that all three of you, including Ijen as well, spend a lot of time traveling around the country and talking to women and talking about to women and others about what was needed. What did you hear? What did you hear when you were out and about, Alicia? Can you give us,
you know,
a sense?
There's so many inspiring stories from across the country where women are really kicking butt and taking names. So if it wasn't, you know, starting your own group in response to being so outraged by the impact and the outcome of the 2016 election, it was women who raised their hand and said, I'm going to run for office. I've never done that before, but I know I can do a better job than what we have right now. And I think what we keep hearing across the country is, I've got involved. I'm doing stuff. I want to do more. I want to make sure that what I'm doing is effective. I want to be connected to other people who feel the same way that I do. I feel isolated sometimes in my small town. I feel like maybe I'm the only one that thinks this way. And how do I connect with women who, you know, think the way I do and want the same things I do? And I think we also heard that people have a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. So I just remember we did a listening session in Birmingham, Alabama. And we did it in this church that was hosted by this incredible woman who is a pastor, and she's a lesbian. And it's a home, it's a hub for activism in Birmingham. And we just put a call out and said, you know, whoever wants to come, come. And, you know, interestingly, the people who came were not the people who've been doing this work for 20 years, 30 years, 15 years. These were people who got involved in the last 2 years. And their major questions were, what's next? How do I keep going? how do we, now we've got our group and we're all trying to figure it out, how do we deal with what happens when you try to do something with more people than yourself? Things come up, conflicts come up. You know, what if we don't agree on things? How do we keep moving forward together? Mm-hmm. And that's really what made it clear to us that the best contribution that we could make in this moment is to make sure that women across the country know that we have each other's backs. And if we do that through training, if we do that through connecting them, if we do it through sharing reading lists, because people are also saying, I don't know where to get information that is, you know, something I can trust and really believe in. I feel like I turn on the news and I can't trust that. So I'm just really depending on people who I know and love to share info with me. We're doing that at Supermajority because we're hearing that's what people want. So if we can add that connective glue, what we know is that women will be unstoppable in 2020 and beyond.
That's great.
Yeah, and it's just, there's a couple, and there's so many amazing stories. And again, and women are also so excited when someone just asks what's on your mind. I mean, I feel like women feel unheard and unseen.
That's right.
And I remember just a couple of things that come up for me. One, I remember being in Austin, Texas, with a group of women, and this young woman talking about, she said, you know, I came today because I worked very hard to finally get maternity benefits on my job. I worked for a tech company. And she said, it felt like such an achievement, even though it was too late for me because I'd already had my children. But then I realized we can't do this one workplace at a time. We actually have to think about this as a political, we need political solutions as well, which of course is just every woman's feeling like, oh my God, am I going to have to just, you know, beat my head against the wall at every single place I work? And then I remember, but I think there's also this desire of women to do better. And I remember this young mother in rural Wisconsin, and she said, you know, I've got two young children. I can't watch any more videos of young Black boys being shot by the police and not do something. I feel like people are beginning, and women, I think, are eager to find out how they can do better, beginning to kind of unpack issues that they have not really faced before. And as Alicia says, that's not always a straight line, right? But it is encouraging to me to see women saying, I'm motivated and inspired by seeing what other women are doing, and I want to learn from them.
So, you know, both you, Alicia and Cecile, are so incredibly inspirational for all of us, and we get so much from your powerful vision and your hope and inspiration. So what has motivated you personally to take this on, Alicia? And sort of what called you to it, and who's inspired you? Can we start with you, Alicia?
Of course. You know, when you asked that question, the first person that came to my mind was my mom. Mm-hmm. And sorry, Cecile, if I...
No.
It might be a similar story for both of us, but at least for me, I do this work for women like my mother, who, to be honest, got pregnant with me. She was in a relationship. The relationship ended. And she was like, yo, what am I going to do? And she leaned on her family. She leaned on her friends. You know, she was out in California, which is way far from where she was born and raised, in Toledo, Ohio. And she had to figure out a way to make it work. And what that meant was she worked jobs that didn't respect her. She worked jobs that didn't pay her. She worked jobs that didn't protect her safety, because she knew she had a child that she had to raise. And every step along the way, my mom would say to me, I'm doing this so that you won't have to. And to be honest, you know, as I got older, times did change. Conditions did change for women. But at the same time, you know, Black women are still facing some of the very same challenges. My mom getting paid less, stocking boxes in the back of a Macy's, or, you know, driving trucks for UPS has not changed since she was doing it. And frankly, the fact that Black women are making, you know, 60-something cents to the dollar that white men are making is absolutely egregious in 2019. And I can also say that I do this work so that no other woman has to wait until everything in her home is finished, meaning her kids are asleep, the house is clean, you know, her partner is taken care of, so that she can pursue her own dreams. For me, I want women to pursue their own dreams in our waking hours before any of that stuff is done. Let your kitchen be messy, because we need your contribution in the world. So that's what motivates me, and that's what inspires me every single day.
Mm-hmm. I love that story of your mom. I can totally see that.
Thank you.
Is she still with us?
She passed away a year ago.
She would be so proud of you.
She is proud.
Cecile, what about you? What motivates you personally?
Well, I guess like sort of almost generationally, it's interesting that I think I'm motivated because this is, I feel like this is just my life's work. And I've been so blessed, frankly, that my entire life I've gotten to choose what I did for a living and choose how I spent my time, and to be able to work on maybe building a more equitable country and world in whatever small way is a privilege. It's a privilege that very few women in this country have the opportunity to do. So I try to carry that and recognize that when people, you know, think it's hard, or no, hard is cleaning 14 rooms for minimum wage in New Orleans, Louisiana, and working double shifts without health care. I mean, hard is what the real lived experiences are of women in this country. And I try to remember that. I guess, though, one other piece of this is I'm obviously motivated by my own daughters, who I was just, the thought that they have fewer rights than I did at their age, particularly in the state of Texas, is outrageous. And I feel like young women across the board are ready to fight back and are ready to actually build a world where there really is equity. And it's on all of us, and it's a joy to be in this work with them, to lift them up, support them, give them the tools and microphone and platform that they need, because they are the agents of change. And it's so, for me, it's a privilege and a joy.
Oh, that's so beautifully said. So it seems that you're encouraging a different kind of a model of leadership than maybe what we've been used to, and that it's really about collaboration and power and agency. And I love you telling these stories of who you're finding when you show up in different places. So what how does this type of approach work, and how are you bringing it to life, a different type of a leadership that you're trying to really basically unlock?
You want to start?
Well, I mean, we're learning along the way. I mean, I know that what we have seen, though, and we've been doing offline trainings and convenings in cities. In fact, we're headed to Texas and Detroit, Portland, Maine, Denver, in just the next few weeks. But what we have found is when you actually put women in a room together and invite them in that space, women who, in many cases, I think about the room we were in Phoenix, Arizona, where you had women who are public school teachers who'd been on strike in just out of desperation because of the lack of funding for their public schools, and had never been activists before, putting in the room with a young woman whose mom, she worries every day that her mom's going to be deported because she doesn't have citizenship and immigration status, and her being able to share her story. Women who have been involved in healthcare issues, a whole set of things, putting those rooms together, where women begin to see, actually, we're all the same. We are all really fighting. We may be in our own little niche working on a particular issue, but boy, when we pull this all together and learn from each other and have and support each other, we are a supermajority. We are something much bigger. That's not a necessarily new idea, but it requires investment and intentional opening up spaces and making everyone feel like they're welcome. And that's just... that to me is true grassroots organizing work, and there's just not enough of it that's happening in this country.
Mm-hmm. I think we've also really made a commitment to creating space for people who are still awakening. And, you know, oftentimes we talk about kind of how did we get here? Right. You know, I thought things were getting better, but it seems like we're going backwards. And how did we get here? And, you know, to be honest, I think that part of what is exciting and scary about this moment, exciting is that there are so many people who either were activated and then kind of went back to their lives, or are just getting activated for the first time. And the thing I hear all the time is like, where can I go to ask questions where I'm not going to be treated like I'm a complete idiot? Where can I go where it's a safe space to make mistakes? Because that is what movement building is. It's about learning in community and learning in relationship to other people who are learning alongside of you. And I think what we've really committed to at Supermajority is being a home where you don't have to be a veteran activist. You don't have to have it all down. You can actually make mistakes. And in fact, if you don't, we're going to think something's wrong with you, right? Maybe we should be following you instead, right? But why that's important to me is because I think in this moment, every single person who cares about what's happening in this country needs to feel like they have a role to play in making the change that we want to see. We cannot afford for people to be sitting on the sidelines, either because they're waiting for somebody else to take care of it, or even worse, because they don't think that their contribution is good enough. Mm-hmm. So for us, what we are really trying to create is like not the perfect place, but it's a place where you can be perfectly imperfect. And still, we're going to keep coming back to each other over and over again. I think if we're successful at that, then there is no stopping us in 2020. When 2 million women are activated, networked with each other, and coalesced around an agenda, we cannot be stopped. And we cannot let things like, you talked over me in a meeting get in between us. That's going to happen. Let's build better tools so that we can come out together on the other side. That's how we are going to build the kind of power that we deserve.
I'm Peggy Clark, and you're listening to The Bridge. If you like today's conversation, then you'll also enjoy our sister podcast, Aspen Insight, which tackles today's key issues and features talks and events from our Aspen community. Join host Amina Akhtar as she goes beyond the headlines to unpack complex policy topics. Their recent episode features a fascinating conversation with former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright on her own life as an immigrant and her own lessons of women's leadership. Subscribe today using your favorite podcast service. And now back to The Bridge. So the first line in the description of supermajority says, women's rights are not just a women's issue. We are a supermajority. This is an issue for all of us. Cecile, tell us what you mean by that.
Well, look, a lot of the you know, when we go and listen to women, there's so many things that are on their minds that have been problems for a long, long time. I mean, Alicia mentioned equal pay. Yes, and we always hear that, well, women make 80 cents on the dollar, but not if you're an African-American woman. It's 63 cents. If you're a Latina in this country, it's 54 cents. These are issues that are not just issues for the woman who's getting underpaid. It's for everyone in her community and everyone in her family and the kids she's supporting. And we talk about, you know, it's so ironic that childcare, which is now the second biggest cost for millions of American families, has always been treated as some sort of side issue. It is a fundamental economic issue that is crippling people all over this country, families' ability to take care of their kids. One of the statistics just blows my mind. Minimum wage in this country hasn't been raised for a decade. Two-thirds of minimum wage workers are women. I'm sure that's not too surprising, but we don't really think about it. That is an economic issue that affects the entire country. And if you're a mom and you're making minimum wage, as much as 60% of your salary is going just to pay for childcare. So we basically have indentured women, millions of women of color, into not even being the economic engines that they could be for this country, not only for themselves, but for the broader community. And so, I mean, our hope is that these kinds of issues that everyone cares about, that affect everyone, are no longer put to the side, no longer considered just women's issues. They understand understood as fundamental issues of our economy, our culture, our society, and this time that they go to the front of the line.
Mm. Yeah, I could not have said it better. I mean, we are facing such enormous mountains that we have to scale. And if we're going to be successful, what that means is that we have to change the way that this country understands what's happening, and particularly what's happening with the majority of it. if we continue to say, you know, healthcare, that's a woman's issue, or, you know, the wage gap, that's a woman's issue, it's not going to change. And you know why? Because for these dynamics to change, everybody needs to feel like this is my issue. And when I go home and I'm trying to think about, you know, planning my life, and I'm trying to think about, you know, what if something happens to my partner? That's not an issue that just is specific to, you know, lesbian couples. It's an issue that everybody's dealing with. How do I know that? Because I dealt with it a year ago with my mom when she got sick. My parents had to figure out what they were going to do. There was, you know, they had a whole life and a business and things they had to figure out. These are issues that are impacting everyone. If my mom did not have health care, my family would have fallen apart. If my partner gets sick and we don't have health care, my family would fall apart. These are not special interest issues. It's just that what we've been suffering from is a political system and a system of power that is trying to keep us distracted from that, because they don't want us to understand why there are inequities in healthcare, why there are inequities in wages. Not everybody's not making a fair wage. Not everybody doesn't have access to healthcare. When we're talking about, you know, abortion bans in Missouri, not everybody's going to be impacted by abortion bans. It's going to be poor women. It's going to be women of color. It's going to be trans women, right? It's going to be people who are being disenfranchised on a number of other levels. So when we say this isn't, you know, that these are issues of national importance, it's that the country cannot move forward until it resolves the contradiction around why some people have and some people don't, and who's responsible for that, and what we're going to do to change it. And what we are betting on is that women are going to be the ones to raise the flag and say, hey, nothing more about us without us. But frankly, when we talk about us, it's everybody.
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking, Alicia and I were in Los Angeles the other day in a room of very, like, established, you know, fancy women, you know, women who were like at the top of their industry. And this woman stood up and said, you know, I was in a very high position in the financial industry. I mean, she was so impressive. And when I got pregnant and finally had my baby, I got 3 weeks of maternity leave. And when I came back to work, it wasn't like, oh, you've been gone for three weeks. It was like I had to make up for all of that. And now this is a woman who has, you would think, all the power, all the access, all the education to fight for herself. But that is women's experience in this country. So when this is not about each one of us doing battle, when is maternity care not going to be considered a nuisance, but actually a fundamental issue for millions of American workers? And it's incredible, though. We still, as you know, we have no enforced maternity leave policy. We have no national medical family leave policy. Only developed country without that. And it wasn't until the Affordable Care Act that we finally got maternity benefits even to cover delivery. This is crazy in this day and time. And again, I think that's where we're saying we can't wait around for incremental change anymore. We have to have big systems change. And I think men are for it too. I don't think these are not simply issues for women.
Absolutely, completely. So, you know, I want to bring the third leg of your stool and the third leg of the stool into the room with us, the wonderful Ai-Jen Poo. And what strikes me so much, and, you know, I've known Ai-Jen for a long time, is you all have been in the front lines. I really can't even imagine what it was like to be at the front lines of Black Lives Matter. And Cecile, for you to be leading Planned Parenthood in such an important and beautiful way. And Ai-Jen used to say, starting a movement is like falling in love. It's like a beginning of a love affair, and you'll have a song that keeps you going, and time will expand in different ways. And so you all are jumping into this very hard battle. Do you have songs? Do you have things? What's going to keep you going? How are you going to create a movement that we can all join you in this way?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's a great question. Alicia is definitely the song list person.
Okay, let's hear
it. I'm gonna hand it over to her. But I actually do believe this is, I mean, and Ai-Jen is a perfect example of this. This is a movement of joy. Mm-hmm. This is not a movement of privation or of, you know, it is a struggle, but it is a joyful struggle. And that is one thing I think we have to really turn on its head, that I feel like I'm inspired to do this work because of the support that women are feeling for each other and the exhilaration they feel at the success of their sisters. And so I do think it's important that we kind of shift the resistance frame into a joyful, this is the kind of world we want to live in and build frame. But but Alicia, honest to God.
But do you have a song or what?
I'm actually going to now just sort of download. Alicia often will put on Instagram what she's listening to. And I was like, that's why she's so awesome.
I do have my rituals. And one of them is a morning soundtrack. Because, of course, you have to start the day with something good. There's a lot of different things that I do. But just bringing iGen into the room for a minute. You know, I'm so lucky to work with such an incredible visionary. And iGen is someone who, as you all know, is an optimist for all optimists. iGen believes that anything and everything is possible when we come together and when we focus and when we dance it out and eat a bunch of French fries. I know she'll kill me for saying that, but it's true. We love French fries, especially after a long day where it just felt like everything went wrong. You'd be surprised how far a plate of French fries can go in bringing you back to life. But I think what I learned from that is we've got to be in it for the long haul. And I know when I was first being trained as an organizer in East Oakland, you know, at 30 years old, I was literally, I mean, I was in my 20s, but, you know, people who were training me were in their 30s and they were laying on the floor because their backs had gone out. And I'm literally stepping over them to go do my 4 hours of outreach, you know, and knock on as many doors as I possibly could. And as I'm stepping over somebody whose back has gone out, I'm saying to myself, this cannot be what I'm signing up for. I am not going to be laying on the floor of some office because I was too stubborn to say, you know what? I need to eat today. I need to eat a good meal. Right now I need to turn off my phone because whatever's happening on the other end is going to be there in an hour, in 6 hours, in 8 hours after I get some sleep, right? And I can actually be present for what it is. And so I take it very seriously. We take it very seriously. And the way that I do it, to be honest, it's not about buying massages or things like that, even though I love a massage. But it's about taking time every single day to take stock of what do I need to keep going. Sometimes I need to veg out and watch TV, honestly. And my partner will say to me, I'll do a confession. I'll say, you know, today I think I really just want to lay on the couch for like 6 hours. And they'll be like, you should do that because you work really hard. So I don't think anybody out there is going to say, oh my God, Alicia Garza laid on the couch for 6 hours. No, in fact, it's what allows me to keep coming back and keep coming back with the perspective of we are going to win and let's try to untie this other knot, right? Let's try to figure out a new way. So, but if I have to give a song, I have a lot of them. I have a lot of them. But today I'm going to go with Anything by Roberta Flack.
Mm. Oh, there we go.
Anything at all by Roberta Flack will just pep you right back up again.
Wonderful, beautiful.
I love that.
A movement of joy. Have you thought of a song yet, Cecile? We're going to go with Alicia's today.
No. Yeah, that's no. Alicia, I bow down to Alicia, but I do think. Look, I think finding joy in the moments is really important, and taking care of each other. Look, I think one of the things, I come out of the labor movement, and I mean it was like kind of Alicia's. It was like such a hard ass, like just like, yeah. You know, work till you drop. You know, never. You know, just it was. It was impossible in many ways. And I think so people sometimes say, like, what do you do for self-care? It's like self-care, like that seemed like such a ridiculous concept. But I have grown to, I'm trying to learn things And one of the things I have learned is there is a lot of pain and suffering that people are experiencing right now and if we don't actually stop and acknowledge it, because what's happening in this country, what's happening in this world is affecting people in very different ways. And so we do need to take care of not just ourselves, we need to take care of each other in a way that I feel like the old style movements, we didn't think about it, we didn't talk about it as much. But I feel like I'm trying to take time and pay attention more, because this is long haul work. And as you know, if you're progressive and you're fighting for social change or any kind of rights, you're going to lose and lose and lose, right, and lose and lose, and then you're going to win. And when you win, you got to really celebrate.
Oh, nice. When you win, you got to celebrate. So, Cecile and Alicia, I really want to thank you on behalf of all of us for stepping into this space and fighting so hard for gender equality and for inspiring all of us listening to you to join you in your efforts for supermajority and for all that you're doing and all the songs you're singing and all the dances you're dancing and all the listening you're doing. And I'm just really honored to have you with us, and I'm so grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to Aspen for including us. We've had an amazing time here, met incredible people and other women who are doing extraordinary things. And that is what, I think that's what this moment is about.
And thank all of you for listening to the Voices of Extraordinary Women on the Bridge, a production of the Aspen Institute. Please be sure to join us next month and to download other episodes of The Bridge on your favorite podcast app. I'm Peggy Clark, and thanks for listening.